I don't care. I don't freaking care if it was sent. Yeah, who cares if I destroyed an hour's worth of work? No, they sent it already. We're good. I'm not that evil. I'm not that evil. I can be, if you want me. I can be your angel or your devil. Booting up the show. Let's get this on the road. Okay.
Why do they keep bringing this? Are they that tall? Jesus.
I feel like a little hobbit when the chair is that far low to the ground. I feel like I'm in a fetal position or something. Let's get everything booted up here. La-di-da-di-da. Oh, they got a QR code now. It took long enough. Sign in and... Get this stinky cord out of the way and put it over here and... Oh, God. @gmail.com. Don't email that, please. I will censor it later. When I'm not busy. We gotta get this show on the road. ASAP.
Oh, yeah, that's why I didn't... Yeah, my brain's scattered right now. My brain is filthy. It's got worms in it, boy. It's got worms and crud and muck in the cobwebs and such. Dang it. Dang it. I'm stressed. Can you not tell? All
right. I think we're good. We can turn it to this computer now, and I believe we're ready to roll. Cue the fun little jingle, editor. Ladles and germs, welcome back to Independent Incidentals. My name is Dominic, and I'll be your host, as always, as in time immemorial, until the sun dies out and withers, I'll be your host. Thank you for having me. When we last left off, we were talking about video games, I believe, and we're still doing that. Nothing's changed, really. The formula's been the exact same throughout. This year is meant for consistency. While the world is being set on fire, I'm making a little hobble home for you. Join my little home. You can enter it if you want. I believe last episode, I was in a bit of a rough spot, as you will. So I decided to make a very easy episode about Stanley Parable, which was a fun episode. I will admit, I liked the tier list at the end. Unfortunately, I didn't beat this game that I'm covering today, which you probably already know. So I will simply be going off the cuff from what I've researched and what I know about this game through my experience. Without further ado... Oh yes, some quick show notes. Sorry, I almost forgot. Look at me being all unprofessional and stuff like that. All right. Right now is episode 14. Some quick show notes for you all. I have very, very exciting things prepared for you in the future. Very exciting things. Very, very exciting things. It has to do with getting someone on the show, but let's just say they're a little bit more of a professional than I am. That's all I'll give you. There'll be two of them that are coming on sometime in March. So stay tuned for that. I hope you will stay tuned for that, because that is going to be very exciting. Additionally, I also have been making my own games. I mean, nothing's been fully released yet, but if you look on the calendar, if you go to Godot Wild Jam, the newest installment, I believe it's 74 or something like that, will be coming out in Friday. So, if I'm not busy then, and I have a fully clean schedule, then I might be participating in it. And I might ask you for help. Yes, you, audience. You can be my test subjects. Yes. I will send you all a copy of the game, very suspiciously packaged, and I'll make sure that each one of you get to test my game. Yes, separate up.
Step right up. I'm sure everyone would love to test my game. My game will be the greatest game. It'll be fantastic. It'll have all the features you need to make the perfect game. What are those features, you may ask? Well, of course, microtransactions. Yes, I know. A lot of people are a bit contentious about that point, but microtransactions, I think, are the future of video games. I think EA has a lot of good things to say about them. So I think... and then I slowly dissolve in a puff of smoke. Today's episode is about Cuphead. If you couldn't tell from the ragtime opening, I'm sure you could tell. There's no other game that has a style like Cuphead. But how was this style developed, and is it even independent anymore? We'll get to that in a moment, audience lovelies. I'll get to that in a moment. The history of the whole shebang. Cuphead was inspired, the idea, the concept, the core idea was inspired back in 2013. However, the two brothers who worked on this game, Jared and Chad, what were their last names again? I don't remember. The point was is these two brothers had a vision as kids to make a game like the run and gun games they played back in the day, a la Mega Man, for example, and other games like that. I'm not really too versed in this. Ninja Gaiden, maybe? Does anyone know? Okay, whatever. Point is, they wanted to make a run and gun kind of game from their childhood, reimagined, right? However, you know, back in the day, they used to work on, like, little prototypes for their games, stuff, because they didn't really know how to program, as it were, because it wasn't really as accessible as it is now. However, they eventually split up when in their adult life. Jared stayed in Saskatchewan to work at their family construction business, while Chad moved to Oakville, right here in Canada. Wow. Amazing. To work on graphic design. Of course, they still caught up and talked about ideas, just spitballing and stuff like that. However, there was a Canadian documentary that came out in 2012 called Indie Game The Movie. Now, granted, I've only seen clips and snippets of this, but there are three core games they covered in this documentary. Super Meat Boy, Fez, and I believe Braid. All of them who had their very, very unique ideas coming into game development and was the first wave, the first gold rush of the indie game scene back in the early 2010s. This was the key to realizing they weren't bound, these brothers weren't bound by the limitations of independent video game development that was the case back in the early 2000s. Like I said before, games like Fez, for example, that were developed with a more robust game engine, had to do that because in order to get their like specific idea fully realized, they had to make their own game engine. However, tools like Unity, for example, Unreal Engine, even Godot, all have their own special unique features that allow any type of game to run nowadays. You can pretty much think of anything, and it can be programmed within these game engines. But back in the day, not as much. When you're making a game like Fez, and you are making a 2D world that is traversed in three dimensions, it's a bit harder to do that with the limitations back in the day. So the brothers revisited the idea of making a game. They didn't have a general theme going into it, but they wanted to make something they loved. Passion is the first rule. That's what my professor says. So they prototyped in 2012. They iterated on ideas. Eventually, in 2013, they came across that 30s, actually technically 10s and 20s, rubber hose style of animation as a placeholder to assets, which eventually snowballed as they went in the full aesthetic they leaned heavily into. It was certainly a tumultuous development cycle. Both brothers didn't have that much experience with programming on Jared's side or animation on Chad's side, right? Both of them had an idea of how to do it, but they didn't know how to do it. So, using the power of the internet, they were able to eventually teach themselves how to do it. Also, you know, some actual books and programming lessons and stuff like that, you know. Gotta keep your vision realistic. Which is the entire motto for this entire development cycle. That's what I will say about it. Because they wanted to start small. They knew they wanted to start small. Like, back when they were just pumping out the prototypes. They literally were like, okay, we're gonna have, with a run-and-gun type of game, you want to have like a certain amount of bosses, maybe a few run-and-gun levels. They want to focus mainly on the bosses, because they said themselves that that's like the main crux, the main meat of these run-and-gun games. These gigantic bosses that you, a tiny little guy, have to fight with your tiny little pea gun or whatever, right? Same kind of concepts as, like, for example, I don't know, Shovel Knight. It also kind of took that same aesthetic. You have to scale down that idea, though, because these games back in the day were made by very, very robust teams of developers, all working on their own little projects within it, right? They all have their own departments that they are working on. Some people working on art, some people working on development. Remember, it started off, this game, Cuphead, started with only two people. So you can't really, this entire project is just funded by passion and pretty much nothing else. And their own day jobs, they were fueling this entire thing with. However, eventually, in 2013, they were able to show a small trailer of the game. And eventually, a Microsoft representative asked them if they could put their game on display in E3 in 2014, and also was able to fund the actual company they were working at. Well, I guess it's the studio they kind of opened. It's not really a company, per se, but that's besides the point. Golden rule, try to maximize eyes without too much money on marketing. Like I said with the Bellatro episode, right? We want to make sure we can get as many eyes on our project as possible without having to spend too much money on marketing. So in this case, with John Bellatro's case, or LocalThon's case, it was trying to get it in the eyes of streamers who were able to play the game and show it to a wider audience, right? But in this game's case, it was ideally putting it in front of the entire E3 market and putting a bunch of hype behind it. But here's the problem. Here's the issue. You don't want to put too much hype into it. You don't want another No Man's Sky on your hands, all right? We want to make sure we're pushing this out normally. So, they got a few more people on the team. The count got bumped up to 6, and mostly it was family who was invited into the company. So in this case, Maya, Chad's wife, worked on directing and inking. And Christopher Madigan, who was literally like the next door neighbors to this to these brothers back when they were kids, worked on the score. We'll get to the score in a moment. The score is an interesting thing to talk about. But besides the point, the next 3 years they expanded the project to 28 bosses compared to just 5 or 10. Like I said before, they kept their idea small, but once they got enough funding from Microsoft and a bunch of other, you know, sources, they were able to expand the project until it became pretty much a second job to them. They also expanded the scope to add more run-and-gun levels, instead of just being completely focused on boss levels. And tried to be completely beside themselves in knowing what they're trying to emulate, specifically in the run-and-gun style, right? I'll get to explaining what the actual style they're trying to emulate is in a moment. But right now, let's get to the gameplay, specifically. Let's talk about what this game actually feels like to play. And maybe add a little more experiences of me trying to go into this game. Let me open the door real quick again, because this place is way too hot. I'm telling you, like, this place, like, they don't, there's nothing. I am cooking. Help me. Help. All right, I think we're good. I think we're good. It's gonna circulate eventually, but, like, geez. Man, it's just not. I'm trying to think here, and my brain, the blood isn't going to the brain. The blood is not going to the brain. All right. So, They finally were able to publish the game after 3 years. Now, here's the thing. When they were publishing the game, there was a lot of crosstalk back in the day about how the game was never going to come out. This thing has been going on since the beginning. It only took them 4 years since they released the first trailer to get it out. And people are still complaining about... They're still complaining about Silksong, which is pretty much the same development cycle, but with less people, right? So obviously it's going to take more time. I'm sorry to tell you this. Game development is an arduous process. You can't rush this because it's a very arduous process. Anyway, besides the point, it also, here's how I first knew about this game. I knew it from either 2017 or 2018 from, I believe I've talked about this before, but there was a special edition, a spinoff of Guinness Book of World Records called Guinness Book of World Records of Gaming or whatever it was, whatever the hell they decided to come up with, that terrible, terrible company decided to come up with. Back in the day, I loved them though, because you got a whole list, like it was from the Scholastic Book Fair. You go in, oh, dude, there's the newest one. You beg your mom for like $20, and you buy it, and it sits on your shelf for the rest of the time. And you like once a month, you take it out and read it, and you're like, whoa, Fibio game. And I remember one of the highlights they had on this was the release of Cuphead, and the fact they were showing off all these specific scenes from Cuphead. And I was like, whoa, that looks so cool. They got a whole direction style. And keep in mind, the oldest cartoons that I've watched wasn't actual, like, rubber hose Disney cartoons. They were Polish cartoons. There was one specific one called Krecik, which was a small Czech mouse, right? Or no, it was a mouse. It was a mole that just kind of got into mischief. And also one episode, he died in a car accident, and I was like, no, and I started crying because I was 2 years old when I watched that episode. But watch what your kids are watching, and don't just, it's not just YouTube kids, I'm telling you, it's everything. Like, there's some depraved things I watch, not even realizing it, right? It's wild to me. Anyway. I believe this game also broke a few records, which is why I was in the Guinness Book of World Records. It broke one specific one, which is the most bosses in a run-and-gun game. Because think about it, no one's been really making that many run-and-gun games until this game came out. So pretty much, it's been this game who was using Unity and a bunch of other, you know, you're able to make a bigger game, a bigger product. You can actually fit more content in it. 28 bosses. Boom. Easy, right? Obviously, the extension, the DLC adds another, I believe, 12 bosses. So that bumps it up to 40 bosses in the full DLC-included game, right? Which is pretty neat. Anyway, besides the point, let's get into the gameplay. The game, this is what you're here for, right? Yeah, gameplay. All right, so the game is separated into a bunch of, there's a few hub worlds in the game, right? I believe there are four in the original, and then there's another one that's added in the expansion. But the practicality is that you can go in a bunch of different directions. There's a few levels that are unlocked to you, some of them bosses, some of them run-and-gun levels, that you can then play. And these bosses are very, very unique. They are probably the most unique bosses in any game that I've ever seen before, besides Hollow Knight, right? Hollow Knight has its own specific theme, and it has its own, like, world it's trying to build, which is very cool. But this game in particular is, like, it's balls to the walls. It doesn't care what it can do. Because Chad, when he was talking about him arduously drawing each specific frame, using, like, a light table to actually draw it like they did back in the 1910s and 20s, he specifically said, like, how he can, like, turn any idea into what a boss he wants. Like, for example, he can turn one of the boss's arms into, like, a hammer or something, and he can turn its uvula into another mouth that's, like, spitting little bullets at you. And then, you know, you turn it into a bullet hell game. Simple as that. Like, it's beautiful level design, and also it just perfectly fits into the theme. It's retro on a whole different level, right? And this is clearly kind of idea where the idea of skeuomorphism comes in, right? The idea of a skeuomorphism is the idea that you can have a concept that has been held up by a specific concept that was previously outdated, that you reintroduce because it's just how what people are used to. A very common example of this is, for example, the shutter noise when you take a picture on your phone, right? Your phone doesn't need to make a shutter noise, right? It doesn't make a noise when you actually take a picture. But when you have volume on, it still makes the shutter noise because that was the standard back when cameras had shutters on them, right? So this game specifically, it has the whole old, like, crackly filter on it. Like, it's like showing it like it was an actual, like, slideshow. Like, they would, like, rolling out the film back in the 1910s and 20s. Like, it's that kind of idea. However, the thing is that, here's a little secret about the music, of course. I'm going to skip ahead of myself occasionally. But keep this in mind. The music is big band inspired, which means jazz up the wazoo. Right? You've already heard a few of them, I'm sure. I will share you another one during the break, right? Which I'll actually play in a couple of minutes. But the idea is that this soundtrack, technically, if we're talking about the actual lining up of the two mediums together, the idea of rubber hose style animation and big band era music, right? They shouldn't line up. Specifically, they were talking about how, like, they wanted to make the thematic understanding of the game to be this kind of like old-timey thing, but it doesn't necessarily have to line up because people don't realize that, right? Like, the music back when these animations were created is more like, I don't know, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, for example, right? That's the kind of music we're kind of playing around with. But big band-style music, I believe, either came before or after that. I'm not too sure, actually, besides the point. I'm not the guy you should be talking to me about this, but besides the point, I believe that big band style music was not lining up in the same direction, which is why they kind of explained that, but they still kept it because it fit thematically anyway, right? The bosses themselves are very fun to play, I will admit. I was stuck on one of the bosses, which is like a clown guy. I forget his exact name, but he's a real piece of shit, and I hate him. But you can eventually, like, I remember there was talks about how they wanted, like, the I believe Microsoft wanted them to bring down the difficulty level because they didn't think this game would be marketable to anybody. But they wanted to have this vision. They wanted to have this idea of harkening back to older styles of play, right? Where do you have to keep throwing yourself at this boss over and over and over and over again until eventually you get it right that one time and you can recall that muscle memory, right? The specific patterns that come at you. Does the boss jump over you or does the boss throw bullets at you? Or is it like in a specific configuration of bullets that you have to kind of weave in and out of? Or does he what phase is he going to switch to after this, right? It's all discovery, right? And you can't really, I guess, recreate that in a simpler way. Of course, there's two difficulty modes during when you're playing these boss levels, right? But they don't give you that big of a grade. They diminish your grade because you are doing a simpler level. So if you want to get the full grade, you have to do the full boss. You still can complete the game while doing everything on simple mode, but it's not the full experience they were going for. Simple as, right? It's interesting how there's a bunch of implementations of how you can do difficulty sliders in games. The Mario games specifically do this interestingly because they kind of, there's a video I watched about this. If you want to watch this video, I believe it's Game Maker's Toolkit, who discussed the idea of instead of having specific a difficulty level that you want to do, right? If you want to mesh it in, you know, seamlessly, then you can make it so that there are specific pathways the player can go down that can make it the game either easier or hard without actually having to choose it, right? they can regulate themselves based on how they're playing the game without having to, like, immediately pick one, have to pick a difficulty level right out of the gate without even playing the game, right? If they want to pick hard mode, but they realized, oh, shoot, I haven't played a game like this in a while. I haven't played, like, a Call of Duty-like shooter in a long time, and they want to bring down the difficulty level, you have to start a new save file, right? And you don't want that from a player because they'll get uninterested very fast. So what do you do about this? Again, I believe there are better ways than just making an assist mode or like an easier level mode that you can switch between. I believe there's just, you just make the game, the challenges in the game harder if they want to do them, right? A game doesn't have to be fully completed. That's basically what I'm trying to say here. You don't have to completely fulfill a game based on getting 100% complete. Not every person has to get 100% completion, right? And that's the thing that I think these people are kind of missing. Not in specifically Cuphead's case, but in general. The game doesn't have to be completed 100%. The game doesn't have to be fully explored 100%, right? Sometimes you just gotta get good. And I can understand in the case of, like, you know, accessibility options. That's the kind of stipulation here, right? But if we're talking about the average player, sometimes you just gotta give challenges to them. And if you don't want to do the challenges, they can just skip them, right? They can go down the main path of the game and not have to focus on any of the actual challenge in the game. Simple as. You don't have to worry about it. Either way. That's my thoughts about difficulty and game design. I'm like the new channel awesome, you know? Like I'm saying my piece about video games. This is like something we should really be talking about nowadays. Anyway, I'm going to do a quick little intermission. We'll do say I made a little playlist for this. Let me see if I can find it. Here it is. It's actually episode 14. I lied. It's not episode 13. What are you talking about? It's episode 14. Wake up! Wake up! Wake up, audience! Ladles and germs, you need to wake up! The demons, they're coming after you. You got to wake up! Elon Musk is gonna buy all the AI companies. Wake up, please! You can't be on weed now. You gotta wake up! Anyway, I'm gonna play a few songs that you probably know. There's a few songs that are probably very, very symbolic of this game. Probably because they're in the first level, the first hub world in this game. The ones that you kind of, like, instinctively know, right? So, for example, I'll play Ruse of an Ooze first, and then we'll play Floral Fury. Floral Fury. Save that 5 times fast. I'll see you on the other side.
Welcome back, everybody! Ladies and germs! I'm just doing a quick capture to see what that instrument is.
It's apparently...
My life is full of questions.
No, it isn't! Shut up! The Koicha? How do you pronounce this? Hold on. Google Translate, help me. Hold on.
Koicha.
It's a koicha, apparently. A koicha is that funny little instrument in the back, which is very, very fun. I like it a lot. It's a very fun instrument. I've never heard it in any other song before. I'm like, wait a minute. What is that instrument? I've never heard it before. But yeah, that's like kind of like the kind of titular songs, because those are the most known bosses. There's that little ooze character that's kind of inspired by what's it called? What's that one game called? Dragon Quest. Yes, Dragon Quest, right? And then there's the other just flower boss. You know the one. You know the flower one. Don't tell me you haven't been to Rule 34 before. Yeah, the game actually has 34 bosses. Don't look it up, though. There's an extra 8 bosses. Don't look it up. It's called... you know what? Sometimes I wonder why I still have a show. Besides the point, these are very good songs. I like them a lot. One of them is more just a simple jazz song. It has a lot of kind of ragtime elements to it. And the other one, the Flow of Fury, is more of a samba. It's a more of a salsa samba kind of jive. It's cool. I like them both equally. Problem is, though, when you're playing the game, you don't really notice them that much because the game's quite hard. It kind of gives you that kind of vibe that you need in order to kind of fully embrace the specific thematic development of the boss that you're facing. Like, for example, like with that flower, it kind of gives you that kind of weird antagonist vibe. And also with the ooze, it gives you that more playful vibe because you know what happens when he, on his third phase, when he turns into a gravestone. Yeah, they get crazy with it. It's fun. Like, for the first phase with the ooze is that, like, he's just a normal guy and he's just bouncing around and you have to shoot him, right? And then he takes a pill and then he becomes a boxer and he starts punching you a bunch, right? And then when you get him down really low, then he turns into a gravestone and starts like shifting around in the background and starts slamming you with his gravestone head. And I'm like, this is exactly what cartoons were back in the day. This is insane. Like it's it's just insane. Like they're taking it to the next level. The fact that you can just like turn a concept into a boss fight, into like a fully playable rubber hose style animation. Like, it's crazy to me. It's absolutely wild to me how much polish it is in this game from how like humble the beginnings were from it. So we talked about mostly about the gameplay. There is one more thing to cover though. The loadouts. Yes, this is what you've been hearing. This is what you've been waiting to hear about. There's a few loadouts in the game that you can buy from this pig man if you got enough coins from the running gun levels specifically. So what you can do is you can buy special power-ups from the running that you got money from the run gun levels to, I guess, for example, get an extra charm that allows you to get an extra life, for example. Or you can change your loadout of your gun because your normal gun is kind of stinky in certain situations where you need to actually, like, be able to hit the enemy, right? So if you want, like, a heat-seeking gun, then you can get an upgrade for that. Or if you want something that has better range, you can get the roundabout, which is kind of like a boomerang, which is pretty cool. No one cares. You know that like one moment when you're talking to somebody and you've been rambling about a specific topic for a very long time and you just look at their face for 1 second because you've been kind of looking at like the space behind them for most of the time when you're talking, and then you look at their face for the first time when you finished, like almost are done talking about it, and they have the most blank, expressionless, I don't give an absolute about what you have to say face ever. Like, it's absolutely soul-crushing. But it's so funny. Because it's pretty much just... Hold on, let me see like if I have this. No, wait. Yeah, it's just that. And you just sit there. And you just sit there and wait. I hope that's relatable to other people, because that's been happening way too often for me. I've been trapped in my own psyche for too long. But practically, the idea of this game is simple. It's a very simple core concept. You shoot the enemy. You have a gun. You don't do any puzzles. You're not doing math. You're not playing cards. I mean, if you're talking about your super, maybe. But that's more stylistically chosen. You build up meter and you can do a super attack. It's simple as that. It's not having to do with actual playing cards, right? You don't have to like manage your specific troops to make sure they put out a specific fire in a specific cabinet in your spaceship, right? You either run and gun or you shoot the boss. It's as simple as that. But the actual intrinsic kind of flow, the different stylistic choices they choose in this game, is just so juicy. It makes you wanting more. It makes you going back for more. I'm probably going to play this amongst other games during reading week. And hopefully finally get to one game I've been putting off for a very long time. No spoilers, but if you know, you know. Let's talk about the reception of this game, because I feel like when this game came out in 2017, everything else was booming for the indie scene. Because we had, there was a bit of a stall during 2014 to 2016. After all those hits back in the kind of renaissance of the Newgrounds era came out, right? There wasn't that many games, like after Fez and Super Meat Boy and a bunch of these other games came out, Castle Crashers, etc., right? There wasn't that many games that came out during this time. After the fact, there was a bit of a hiatus on the games industry. And then eventually, the indie market booted up again. Granted, there was a bunch of AAA games that came out during then, but we don't talk about those because that doesn't matter. That's not our point. That's not the point. You don't get it. Sorry. I'm going to therapy. I'm talking to him. I'm making sure. It's hard for me, you know. It's hard for me as much as it's for you. Like, I try my hardest. It's like my hardest isn't enough. You know, I try all the techniques. I count to 10. I take deep breaths. I make sure that I'm eating less sugary foods, but I just don't know what's going on with me. So basically the idea is that the second wave of indie games was booming during 2017. You had this game. You had Hollow Knight. You had Slay the Spire. You had Bendy and the Ink Machine. I'm not going to talk about that game. That game is an absolute atrocity, and I wish no one ever talked about it ever again. But you had a bunch of other games, too, that came out during that time. 2017 was a big, huge hit. It was the second wave for indie development, which is a fantastic thing for me. So this game came out, and it was a celebrated game during its time, and it won a bunch of awards. And also, a bunch of other things came out. Like, for example, in more recent news, right, you got the 2022 was another big year for Cuphead, because then, after the fact, 5 years later, they produced an entire show on Netflix. Crazy. Wild to me. Also, it doesn't really add up with the actual stylistic choice. Doesn't really matter too much, though. It's still a great success for them. Also, they got the DLC out, right? So 12 new bosses. People are chomping it up again. They're eating it by the bit. Delicious Last Course, I think it's called. I'm pacing myself with these games. Because here's the thing. A lot of these games take a lot of time to complete. If you don't have that time commitment, like I don't right now, I don't have any time except for me just trying to coast in life, trying to catch up on everything that I can, right? And if I can't do those things in a timely fashion, then this game is going to take it. These games are going to take that backseat, obviously, right? You're not going to be able to finish these games in a timely manner. However, there was one boss I was able to complete very, very apropos of nothing. There was one lady, I forget what her name was, Von Sweets or something like that. That's the Wreck-It Ralph character. Hold on. Sweet villain, boss, Cuphead. Candy boss Cuphead. There we go. Baroness Von Bonbon. There you go. That's the one I'm talking about. The hard part with this boss, specifically, is that there are three bosses, there are three phases in each boss, right? Each boss will have either three or four phases, whatever, right? They could have more, they could have less. It's kind of a guideline, not a rule, right? The thing about with this boss, though, is that the shuffling of the phases is completely random for the first three, I believe. You have to fight three different of her little minions. They come up randomly, depending on, I don't know, the luck of the draw, I guess, right? And I believe there's like six different enemy types they could choose from. Like, for example, there was like a, hold on a second. Phase one. Yeah, there's five different ones. There's, they all have their own names too? That's insane. What? There's Lord Gobpacker. Each of them also have their own, like, death lines if you die to them specifically, right? So it's very, very, very concise. Not concise, but, like, very, what's the word I'm looking for here? Very content-driven. Very, like, stylistically undevoid of any, like, it's fully void. I don't know what's the opposite of the void? Full? It's full of creative ideas here. Because each of them are their own expressive, like, idea, different character that you can fight in this game. You know what I'm saying? This game is like pudding to me. You keep coming back for more. That's not exactly... You get what I mean, though. This game is like, it was developed in 4 years by two and eventually six people, right? The amount of creativity one has to have in order for that vision to be fully realized, for that entire game to come to fruition from the very humble beginnings of putting a funny little clip of a rubber hose style animation cartoon from the Disney era back in the day, and eventually reintegrating that and making that the full concept of the game, and eventually running with that, having enough passion to continue putting their free time while still having their full-time jobs working on this game daily, consistently. That's the kind of drive that I want to have when making a game. And a bunch of, like, these game developers, they're insane to me. They're absolutely insane to me. They all have their own jobs, their own experience. But somehow they are able to be a jacks of all trades to me. Like, again, take, for example, I don't know, Stardew Valley, for example. That guy made the whole game by himself. Maybe with a little help here and there, right? But the entire game was him working on music, working on art, working on coding. Like, these people, there's not enough of these people in the world, I believe. There's not enough of these people who want to explore different avenues in life and aren't tethered down by one specific department or one specific field of study, right? You could be working on art for a specific game, and that's really cool. But also, think about working on music. Think about working on coding. Think about working on, like, marketing. I don't know. Like, you could do whatever you want with this kind of stuff. Run wild with it. Learn how to do things. Because these guys, they were in their, like, 20s or even their 30s. And they were working on the game, too. And they didn't even know how to code. Like, the one guy didn't even know how to do coding in what was it? Unity. He didn't even know how to do Unity, right? Or he didn't even know how to do animation. Chad didn't know how to do animation. Jared didn't know how to do Unity. And they were from humble beginnings. They eventually were able to bring themselves back into the game they wanted just through sheer force of will. Willpower was the thing that drove them to finish the game, which is the thing that I want to leave you guys on. If there's a specific thing that you're trying to build with your games, then do it. Doesn't matter how improbable it is. Use the little time that you have in your day if it's something that you actually want in life. If it's not something that you just kind of are like, yeah, whatever. Because I lived through that too. There are things in life that you actually want to do and you want to see realized, right? And nothing, not even a generative AI that could do it all for you, would change the fact. If someone could do the entire game for you, would you get that satisfaction from it? If you say yes, and I don't know how your character would hold up, personally. But that doesn't matter. Because I know that's a lie. And I know that there's actual creative people in the world who want to see their full vision realized. Building the game like a woods craftsman from their own two hands. Coding the game. Developing the mechanics in the game. Polishing it. Working on the art, the music. The sheer feeling of the game. That's what this game evokes to me. It evokes a sense of understanding in a world where games industry has become completely corrupted by bankrupt ideas. Personally, I think that you can enjoy whatever you want. And that's fine. Perfectly fine by me. But if you don't give these games a shot, if you don't give these games a chance, then I believe wholeheartedly that the games industry isn't going to last as long as you think it will. And that's not a threat, okay? That's not a threat. That's just my idea of what the games industry could look like in the future. That's the more pessimistic idea. Because if people are continuing to, continue peddling these re-releases, these kind of recopying of the same idea iterated through the generations with better graphics, better quality, and that's the only thing they're bringing to the table, then I don't know where we're going to keep going with this. Are we going to leave the process of making games in the hands of the people? Or are we going to kind of ship it off to the multi-billion dollar corporations who believe they have the best interests in mind, when in reality they just want money? Right? I digress. I hope that everyone has a fantastic reading week. And I'll see you in about 2 weeks. Again, like I said before at the start of the episode, we have some very exciting things prepared. We might get a few expert opinions, as it were. I hope that you guys stay tuned for that. But without further ado, I've been Dominic. This has been Independent Incidentals, and I hope you all have a fantastic reading week. See ya!